Word to the Wise. We are an explicit podcast tackling content with adult themes. This week, we'll be heavily focused on the first four books in the Stormlight Archive. Maybe some, like, very vague stuff for the other books, but I wouldn't worry too much about that. Welcome to Words and Whiskey Short Pours, weekly-ish podcast filling in for some of the space where, you know, PJ's missing, but I'm super excited, where we get to have a fun time discussing fictional worlds and the people that create them, all while booing just a little bit. My name is Cross.
And I'm Neil.
And we are here today to talk about Neil's journey through Stormlight Archive, Rhythm of War, and kind of everything Sanderson so far, some predictions for Wind and Truth. I'm very excited to have you on the show, finally.
Me too. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah. It's kind of funny because we've done like a number of Patreon episodes with everyone, and I've always, like, in my head, I've been like, Neil actually reads the most of any of my friends.
That is not true. I listen to many audiobooks, but
still more than, like, PJ didn't read beforehand. Adam barely did, you know, and like, obviously those things have changed. But I was like, why haven't, like, Neil and I liked the same kind of books forever? Like, it's just very funny to me, at the very least.
I will say that I'm already beating my goal of physical books read this year from what I read last year. I'm at 3 this year, and I think I did 1.5 last year. So I'm really hitting it hard.
That's fair. Fair enough. Fine enough. What I'd love to do before we talk about specifically like what we're drinking and kind of get into the meat of the episode is just give a little background on yourself. Maybe some of those books that you read last year, some of the books you've read this year, you know?
Yeah.
Your preferences.
When it comes to books, I mostly have been fantasy and sci-fi and grew up reading that stuff. Have just kind of always from Redwall books when I was a lot younger and, you know, Lord of the Rings and every single Star Wars book in the extended universe that I could get my hands on that wasn't awful. And that's kind of been a lot of it. Like I said, audiobooks have been kind of my way to keep active with reading while I do other things. I just like to multitask, but now I gotta think about what I've been reading. I just finished Unconquerable Sun by Kate Elliott.
I don't know that book, and that is I do know Kate Elliott, but Unconquerable Sun. Okay, how was it? Did you like it?
It's very good. I already have the second book ready to go, if that tells you. So
yeah.
But I'd say I've had Ready Player One. I have a tendency to re-listen to all of the old Star Wars books. They're just kind of, those are my comfort.
They're joy bombs. Yep, yeah, I'm with you.
Easy to go through. I do love old mystery. Growing up, I would always listen to Agatha Christie books with my mom. Mm. So those have a place in my heart. And so I'll throw those on from time to time. And I also, Devil in the White City, I like some historical fiction. That was a good one, but kind of a lot of fiction, a lot of science fiction, fantasy. That's kind of my main focus. And yeah,
that's our jam on the show, too, obviously. So, you know, it's very clear. And we in high school definitely bonded a lot over the Star Wars books because I don't think anyone else had read them that we knew.
Not to the level that we had. Nobody else was into the extended universe the way we were.
Mm-hmm. We were just like waiting for the new Yusong Vaughn books and and all of the sort of extended the Rogue series, Rogue Squadron, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I have all of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's definitely a favorite. Yeah. Yeah, I guess we've known each other since middle school.
Yeah, at least seventh grade. We had mutual friends, actually Adam, who's going to be on the podcast next week, of whom we were definitely at the same birthday parties of, but I wouldn't have called us friends so much as party goers.
Yes.
You know, at the time. Yeah. But it's been
a long time.
It's true. It's true. Neil has been one of my oldest friends. Cool. Yeah. So I'm very excited. This is kind of fortuitously accidental in some ways. You didn't tell me that you were reading this, and then you just kind of sprung it on me that you're like, I think it was when you were in either the second or third book that you're like, I am like knee deep and I'm like close to starting Rhythm of War. And I was like, what? We should totally talk about that.
Yeah. I called you one day and mentioned that. And then, when this kind of talked initially about doing this, and then when it came about, I was at that point then finishing Rhythm of War, which the audiobooks are 60 hours each. So I have put a lot of hours in listening.
Yeah. I mean, and if you consider the regular length of an audiobook, right, like you're talking like 20 books worth of audio collectively between the series effect, like normal books.
Yeah. An average book is 9 to 15 hours.
Right. Yeah. So a sizable amount of reading. Brandon even describes each of the books basically as a trilogy on their own, because he kind of plots it out as like five really big plot beats and then kind of obviously everything in between. So, yeah, I mean, it's a hefty thing to get through. So where did your journey get started with Brandon Sanderson in general? Is this your first experience?
This is my first experience. One of those things, I kept hearing The Way of Kings from a lot of different people that it was a good book. I have an Audible subscription, so every once in a while, I'll just kind of grab a whole series when I have a bunch of credits lined up. I also have a tendency to try and get the most value for my Audible credit. So nice, a 60-hour book, that was great. So initially, I got it, I think, probably three years ago, at least. And
okay,
it
cool.
sat in my library. I started listening to it. I didn't really catch me. I did that a couple times, I think, where I'd kind of started and it just didn't quite get me there. And then I finally, this within the last year, I kind of let it go, and then it finally started interesting me. And I realized a little bit, as we'll maybe get into, a little bit into the book that I remember, but definitely it caught me. And then suddenly I found myself finishing the fourth book. So
yeah,
it kind of just happened.
I went on a similar quest, and I think it was around a similar time frame too when I initially read them. I want to say it was we had started the podcast and I had read Mistborn, the trilogy, and then naturally it was like, okay, well, if we're going to cover Mistborn, I should just read everything in the Cosmere. And so I jumped in, did the standalones, and then similarly like dove and tore through the Stormlight Archive. And yeah, I think you read it faster than I did, but nonetheless, good work.
The audio does help.
I did an audio too. I was doing it while, was it? No, that was the Joe Abercrombie series. I was co-doing it. Similarly, I do audiobooks a lot of the time just because it's a way to do other things at the same time. And especially with like a chonker like that, it was like, okay, my thing with big fantasy books has been playing like open world video games at the same time generally, because there's so much to do. Some of it's like brain dead, mind numbing stuff that you just kind of like have to get done. And so it's better to like focus on something else, even though like I'm enjoying playing the game, but not nearly as much as like the co-immersion at times. So cool. All right. So that kind of starts us off. Before we get too much further, what are you drinking tonight, Neil?
I thought about this as I was leaving work today. And this Saturday, my wife is doing a Galentine's Day party. And her friend who she's going to, her husband was like, I have nothing to do, want to drink whiskey and play video games. And that sounded great. So I thought, I'm going to stop and get a bottle of whiskey. So I got some, I think it's Keeper's Heart whiskey, which I believe is made in Minneapolis.
Cool.
And I bought some raspberries and blackberries and made my own shrub syrup. So it's raspberries, blackberries, sugar, and a little bit of vinegar. And I really like that to take the edge off. And then I kind of made my own old fashioned out of that and as kind of a trial run. And it turned out really good. So
that is so cool. I have never made a shrub. This is something that PJ and I talked about recently. And we were both like, I think PJ has made one shrub, but like it's been a desire, like because it does have such a different mouthfeel.
My favorite drink the favorite drink that I've made for myself that other people have also agreed is like a tequila. It's very similar shrub syrup to this, but with tequila and I think maybe like orange juice. Really refreshing in the summer. The shrub syrup just makes it not so overly sweet.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Shrub's nice because it pushes it in a different direction, not like a full on savory direction, but it cuts through similar to, you know, the way that Simple does without like super diluting everything. Yep. Yeah. Nice.
Yeah.
That sounds really good. You had mentioned that you were going to make an old fashioned. And so I decided in similar fashion against having a Negroni and had an old fashioned as well. Mine's pretty straightforward. It's also, I was just thinking the other day and I went to the liquor store and I was like, I haven't had like an Irish whiskey in a long time. So I grabbed two gingers out of fond respect for us and our old house and otherwise that we had together. So.
I've had all the two gingers for my life has been consumed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. super fair. But yeah, so I made a two gingers old fashioned, pretty straightforward, pretty easy on that side of things. Okay, awesome. Let's talk about the books. Let's hop in here. So let's start at the beginning, naturally. Way of Kings, you know, it's been like a month and a half. I'm just kidding. It's probably been a little bit longer than that, but like pretty close to when you read it. How do you feel about it kind of in hindsight? How do you feel about the books on the whole? Overall feelings?
I had to go back to the wiki and the synopsis to remember what all happened, because I've just rolled through them so quickly that they all kind of blend together. And yeah, I mean, I didn't realize, I don't remember that the book starts talking about the heralds. That was not something, that part completely, that was the bit I wasn't paying attention for. This was background noise. I think it took a while in the first book for me to catch on to the characters and be interested. I think
there are three prologues. I mean, the book has three prologues.
I think Kaladin is really the one that caught me first, is like the most interesting character. And I think really in the first book, he is probably the most compelling character. Shallan annoyed me initially because she keeps making the wrong choices and making her life worse repeatedly. And I think that gets better explained and justified in the later books. But in the first book, it was kind of like, just stop doing dumb things.
You're genuinely fucking up. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, just tell Jasnah what's going on. Stop doing this.
Yeah. Don't lie to Jasnah. There's no reason to. I mean, there were, don't get me wrong, but yeah, it's still like a, you know, it's a little bit more of a like a step of obfuscation to some degree that she like didn't need to take, but you know, plays into her nature later. And I think it lends itself to Words of Radiance and kind of what comes after. So Way of Kings, which is arguably, I love using this comparison, is like the sports book of them all. So, you know, it is like a very, because you have the crew running the bridges and everything like that, it has this sort of like team bonding versus like classic fantasy action, which is an interesting twist.
Yeah, and I think one of the themes that I do really like throughout the whole series is just this calling into question everybody's morals and what they view as right, and just throwing different perspectives from, is it, you know, how, from UC Dalinar's perspective, what he's trying to do and how he views everybody else. And then you see Kaladin's perspective of just being ground down by this, and Shallan's just totally
by being
outside.
In dark eyes. Yeah.
Shallan's outside perspective of being a light eyes who is still on the verge of catastrophe, and how it just different areas, different groups of people can experience the same things, but at very different levels. And I think, I mean, as you go through the series, looking at like Spren and everything else, it really, they keep doing that of pushing people into questioning what they think is right. And I do really like that.
Yeah, I think that Brandon does a very good job, and the series does a really good job of taking the question of what's right morally a lot of the time and kind of pushing against the boundaries. I think there are some things, in my opinion, that I don't think that he explores as much as I would like. I think that he kind of, like, in my opinion, in the first couple books, drops the light eyes, dark eyes thing pretty aggressively after Words of Radiance. But, you know, fair, I guess, if you didn't want to really like tackle that idea or topic too deeply. But then again, I think it kind of gets into similar kind of moral quandaries when we start to get Venli and Raboniel's flashbacks, or Venli and, is it Raboniel?
Yeah. Or Venli and Leshwi.
Yes.
And Eshanai,
yeah. So when we get the, yeah, when we get the listener and singer flashbacks. So like, and then that gets into kind of a more complex conversation too, which is very much the grounds of epic fantasy, right? The sort of like larger moral questions, you know, interrogating the idea of conquistadors and conquerors and who's here first. And, you know, is there ever a moral right in a lot of things? Not obviously that, but, you know, generally speaking. So largely, too, the book explores a couple of other things within it. And I definitely want to dip back into the characters. But since we've kind of veered in this direction with a little bit of magic and Spren and otherwise, I'm curious what you think about the magic system and sort of the representation of the shards and like this sort of grander idea of the magic of the universe.
And I think what you said about the light eyes, dark eyes thing made me think of this more, but I think it's very interesting at the start, and you know, it grows and it's like, ooh, this really cool thing. And I think he does have this way of kind of like, it gets layered on and gets more complex to where you lose some of that excitement with it. And it's like, well, I'm just waiting to find out the next thing that it's going to do that nobody knows about versus, wow, it's really cool, all these things that they can do.
Right.
And yeah. It, for as long as the books are, it feels like there is a very quick jump to kind of push past things. And like, this is now just accepted fact. Same thing with Light Eyes, Dark Eyes. It's, you know, it's mentioned occasionally, but it's not really a thing past book two.
Yeah.
Other than just one-off mentions that it's still a thing, but...
Right, right. I mean, in particular, the closest you get to like interrogating that, for instance, at the end of your journey so far in Rhythm of War is with Kaladin's father, when he's still like, are you standing up for the Dark Eyes, you know, versus the Light Eyes? Like, are you like the son that I want? Kind of being an asshole throughout a lot of that book.
Yeah.
But yeah. Although, yeah, I mean, it's appreciated too, because I think one thing that Brandon does, I think, really well in Stormlight for the most part is create good, not incredible antagonists, but good antagonists, and like making sure that everyone has like a driving motive. And I think Kaladin's father in Rhythm of War is a great one, in addition to Moash. But yeah, we'll get back there. So, okay, I agree with you on the magic system. Personally, I really like it. I really liked it at the start of this series in particular. And I know that you've started Mistborn, so I don't want to dig in too much on that.
I barely started Mistborn, so
cool. Yeah.
Not far into it.
I'm just going to say that in general, in my opinion, I feel like the magic for the duration of the story is handled better in Mistborn. And I mean, just literally the systems that the characters use, because I do feel like the oaths to me almost feel, and this can be enjoyable for some people, but almost feel a little bit video gamey in the later books.
Yeah, it's like you level up.
Yeah. And it's like, that's cool, but not simultaneously. I don't know.
I think
I've got mixed feelings.
Yeah, I think there's this wide potential that gets shown of what Stormlight can do just initially as Kaladin, just his surge and how he understands it. And it feels like we haven't even fully explored what he can do.
Right.
Let alone reaching higher oaths.
And then like, the 10 other, you know.
Yeah. Like.
Right.
I do think, and yeah, I can't keep track of the other surges like it. I know they've been explained. I do think had I had the written book with like some of the diagrams that are described in the audiobook, that may have been helpful, but
recommended. Yeah
it feels like they show this super wide possibility and then they just kind of leapfrog over that to this next level of, oh, it's even more. And it feels like we haven't explored what can really happen with what's already been presented, and it makes me sometimes want to go like, wait, can we go back and like explore what this means?
Yeah.
And it's like there's higher levels of oaths too, or ideals. Mm-hmm. And right. Like, I don't know. I'm hoping that in the fifth book, there is more of this, but it does just feel like they've jumped over a lot of that initial promise of the magic system that I still would really love to understand better.
I agree with you. I think that is one of my, like, it's not a deep complaint, but it is a complaint that I have for the series on the whole. Like, and it's a minor gripe, I think, by comparison. That said, we are 5 books into a 10-book series. There is plenty of time for this to continue in a number of different directions. So,
and I do think that that's something that's, I think, very clear. There are authors that write a story and they're authors that build worlds. And this is clearly him building a world. And also, you know, as I didn't really know anything about the Cosmere, but I've heard of it. So when they start mentioning that in the books, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. This is part of a larger series. And there's more to this than just this book series.
Interesting. You're dragging me around my questions here, which is good because they're logical in their progression to some degree. And I want to come back to magic systems just like I want to come back to characters. But given that, and given that you're referencing the idea of the Cosmere, what do you think? I mean, you haven't read anything else, like we said, by Brandon Sanderson. So including The Wheel of Time and the end of The Wheel of Time, right?
No, have not.
Okay. Because I feel like you've read the first couple of Wheel of Time books. I feel like we've talked about that.
I think long ago. Three. I did.
Yeah. I think it was in high school because I think we talked about it. But because I was upset that Robert Jordan died. And then I was also kind of not pumped when Brandon Sanderson was announced as the guy finishing them. But taking a step back from that, though, the Cosmere on the whole and sort of the references that you find or that are among the pages. I've been curious about this in a lot of our podcasts, and sort of the idea is like taking people through stories for the first time or talking about like re-exposure and kind of beginning to break them down critically. So I'm curious, PJ is going to have the opposite experience. He's just started Way of Kings. He's read everything else. You've read nothing else. So this is another reason that this is really interesting to me. Do you feel like you're missing any context ever? Does it feel like you're missing like an inside bit or beat? Okay.
I think wit and that not monk, what are they called?
The sword trainer?
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hang on. Zahil? Yeah.
Yeah, Zahil. Mm-hmm. There's just this clear, like, there's more to them in almost this, it makes me think of, like, there's this higher level of being in, like, a Gandalf the Grey sort of way, where it's, like, there are these beings operating on a fully different level, and they're just kind of meddling almost for fun, in a way.
Sure.
That's, like, Wit very much gives me that vibe of just, like, I'm basically a god that's just here kind of messing around for fun. So.
Okay. Nothing else, though? Like, those are the two that you really, like, have keyed into, more or less? How do you feel about Nightblood? That's a good third to that their pair, I think.
Yeah, I do feel like that's, like, an inside joke that I meant to understand. Mm-hmm. But it is kind of this out-of-left-field thing of, like, we've established the Shard Blades and the Honor Blades. Oh, and then there's this one other blade that just wants to eat everything in the world.
Yeah.
And it does...
He just wants to kill evil. That's his goal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Destroy evil.
So that's
fair. Super get it. And that's part of the reason that I thought that this was a really interesting question is because, you know, I find obviously I read it not in chronological order necessarily, but like the adjusted chronology. So like I also had all of the hints kind of going in. So I haven't had that experience on the other side. And I've been personally very curious. And I was like, oh, well, PJ isn't going to have that. Matter of fact, I believe fundamentally that it is almost more important to read the first four Stormlight books first and then go read other things, because there are some pretty wild spoilers and a couple of things that really, I don't know, that I feel very strongly about tanking just for you and for your edification. There is a book in the Mistborn series. The rumor of the Ghostbloods is entirely spoiled. And so it feels like, and PJ's already read that. And so like, I'm like, PJ's going to know who the Ghostbloods are when he reads Words of Radiance. And that feels like a bad thing to me because it's such a core mystery in my favorite book in this series. So
I do think the Ghostbloods feel like this, the way that they're introduced feels like this kind of weird, like funny gang that's like just tracking them down. And it doesn't, there's no like, I guess even through the end of book four, I don't really get that sense that they're this massive organization. They've never really conveyed that well.
Sure.
It still feels like this kind of half-assed weird thing that's like pulling a lot of strings, but also just kind of in the background messing with stuff. Mm-hmm. And kind of, again, very like ulterior to the rest of the plot, but kind of intermixing.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely get it. It just makes for an interesting experience reading through that way. So I'm curious how you'll feel even when you get through those books in addition.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So I do want to reel it back here a little bit because we went super far forward to some degree. I want to wind back to the magic system and then we'll wind back to characters and individual books and things like that. So not talking necessarily about the surges themselves, but more of the world of magic that surrounds this, right? The Spren, you mentioned the Honor Blade, some of the like idea of investiture. In the end of Rhythm of War, there's like the Voidlight, Stormlight, anti-Voidlight, anti-Stormlight kind of conversation that goes on. And then also the shards, right? They're, of course, like the ones that we have represented to us are Cultivation, Honor, and Odium, as sort of these larger sort of gods that linger over the story. How do you feel about the cosmology of it all, including those factors? The realms, I forgot, like Shadesmar and the spiritual realm. But yeah.
Again, it's one of those things where I think the really good thing that he does is to build it in such a way where, like, as you add more things on, it's kind of loosely based in physics in a way that's like, we talked about this before, where it's like,
yeah,
oh, like that generally makes sense. Like the way mm-hmm. that works is the way that things generally work in physics. So it's yeah. not
constructive and deconstructive interference. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Like I like different types of light and different materials melding together. And, you know, and so I think that that's something that's done well, but it does feel overwhelming as a whole. And I think especially in this last book where it's really accelerated. And we talk, okay, now there's storm light, void light, cultivation light, and all these mixes, and anti-void light, storm light. Like, that completely mm-hmm. changes, it completely changes the entire tone of the war. Like, okay, now you can actually kill these beings that are endlessly regenerating, or these Spren. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a major change in the way that the story has worked, in the way that the war has progressed. You know, in almost a way that like breaks it so much that it feels like everything else was just pointless.
Ooh, man, I agree. No, I'm so with you there. And I am so with you. And we'll talk about book rankings in a bit here. But for me, Rhythm of War, I think, is still my least favorite Stormlight book. And not because it's bad by any stretch. I think it's very consistent in pacing, and like it exposes a lot of great ideas. I think it goes on at length, though, about some of this stuff that is both interesting and unnecessary at times. I don't know if you had a similar conclusion or not, but I do feel like the various pictograms help, but also it very much felt like, I don't know, at best, like 10th grade physics at times. So for extended periods of time.
And I agree, like there, for a lot of it, it was like interesting. Like I get in like that, mm-hmm. just the joy of like discovery, like, oh, and there's also a little bit of like, there's enough of like a, you know, what's going to happen next, just because it mm-hmm. kind of logically makes sense. Like, yep, you're going to be able to combine these. You're going to like it. There is a little bit of annoyance of just like, okay, let's get on with it. I can see what's happening here.
Yeah.
Let's get there. But it's also the joy of discovery is there too. So I think that there's a pretty good balance there in that.
I'd agree. I think that I do give it a little bit of a hefty, you know, like hindsight review in some ways, which is why I think also my review of that has raised a little bit in estimation, because in the moment as I was reading through, I was like, holy mother of God, I understand how constructive and deconstructive destructive interference works. It's the same way that noise canceling headphones work. It's the same way that, you know, it's the basis of the Doppler effect that he explains it once or twice over the course of the, and I'm just like, oh, I get it, dude. But yeah. Okay, cool. I want to ask one more time, just to kind of dig in. How do you feel about the shards and like the idea of the gods and sort of this sort of larger picture?
It feels like something, it feels like I'm waiting for him to write the later book to explain it to me.
Sure.
Like, okay. It's interesting. Like it's like, make a note of that. I'm curious when I learn about that later, but it doesn't mm-hmm. really mean anything right now other than, yep, they're parts of gods. They have a ton of powers. And that implies that as shards of divinity, there is a divinity that they are a part of. Are mm-hmm. they all a part of the same
or
divinity?
Were once. Yeah.
Yeah. Or were once. Mm-hmm. And again, it almost to me implies that there's another higher level of playing field beyond even these shards that are interacting on Roshar. And it's like, it's kind of like the Marvel universe where it just keeps expanding.
Sure.
And
yeah, I think there's a limit here, yes. Thankfully, versus by comparison, but
yes,
I'm with you there.
But yeah, I think it's something that I'm aware of it, but it doesn't really, at this point, I don't care about it.
It's
that
not
much,
intriguing.
To be honest.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. I had, you know, I really love the driving force of the characters in these stories, and we'll immediately segue into characters from here. I had read Mistborn entirely before, so I think that they may have helped inform my opinion on shards and or otherwise, and sort of the idea of gods and in this grander universe as it's explored. So I had a very different experience there, and I found a lot of treasure and joy, but I think it could be just a difference in sort of the layers of reveals. In that, before we go to characters, each chapter comes with its own sort of epigraph to some degree, which are sometimes letters. There's sometimes the what do they call them? Death knells. All of these different components. Between that and the interludes, how do you feel about sort of these extra textual And I mean like paratext, but how do you feel about like that sort of adjacency of storytelling?
I think it's interesting, but I find myself glossing over it a lot.
Oh, fuck. All right, cool. I totally get it.
I don't think I missed this, but like the Death Notes, like that was a thing that kept being like kind of mentioned off and on. And then I was like, okay, Taravangian is researching this, but then it just fizzled. There was no resolution to that. And it kind felt of, like,
yeah.
It felt like this kind of big thing that they were like leading to. And it, I don't know. I think that kind of made me lose a little bit more interest. It's like, okay, I get it. But back to the story thing that I'm here for.
Yeah. Give me those main character beats. Give me those plot beats, Brandon. I'm with you. I think that there is a component of this. Brandon cites a number of influences for the series on the whole. Obviously, the Wheel of Time is a big one for him and sort of the grand scope of Epic. But one of the ones that he's been calling out lately is Watchmen. And I think I finally get it. And I didn't understand it first. And it's this combination of sort of the multimedia of having the intermodal communication of like Shallan's writing notes in the marginalia. And you have like Jasnah's notes and or Jasnah's notes. And you have obviously like the letters between Wit and Frost, seemingly this dragon that exists somewhere. Also, dragons are real. Like there are all these different like things that are like tangential. And you just kind of want more from it, which is very Watchmen-esque in my mind.
I think they're, at least to me, it's something where it's like, I note it and I move on. I don't really think about it. And then later, if it comes to fruition, I'll go, oh yeah, that sounds familiar. And then I might have to like go and look it up and go, oh yeah, that was a thing that happened. Like it sits in the back of my head, but it's not something that I'm sitting pondering what they mean.
Sure. It could be my fault. It could be. Man, Wit being the mystery that he is, you know, like that's part of the reason that I dug into those, I think, more. The Death Knells, I don't think I paid nearly as much attention to. I was like, what are we looking at here? Like, what is this really? And yeah, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Okay, we've kind of circled end around in a couple of different ways. I'd love to talk about the things that I enjoy most about the story, and I think that you do too, based on our conversation, which is the characters. You know, who are some easy favorites? What journeys have you liked the most as opposed to their destinations? You know, what's your view on our cast here?
Kaladin was
Johnny Stormlight. Yeah,
Johnny Stormlight. He's my favorite. He's the one that just kind of, it's the easy catches you. It's like, you're like, he just wanted to succeed. He's
depressed.
He's depressed. His morals are very straightforward. Like he gets challenged on like what he's doing and why and how, but overall his goals basically stay the same. And like he keeps moving forward and things happen and he has a hard time dealing with it. But I think he's probably the most straightforward character.
Sure.
Shallan, like I said, annoyed me at first, and then I really think that he did a very good job of making her make sense, and I appreciate that he did actual research into like what multiple personalities can be, and you know, I don't know much about that, but it was a much more interesting of like developing that and why she is all this trauma that she's dealt with and why that's made her this way and why she's avoiding and all of these things. And so I've actually come to like her more. Dalinar is, I like him, but he's not my favorite.
Like, oh man.
Anyway. I like him a lot, but I think he in a way just kind of fits this
Daddy archetype. Stormlight. Yeah. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
He's Daddy Stormlight, and like it's very cool, but it's like he's almost sitting in the background, kind of just guiding things. And
I totally get it. I agree with you for the record. Dalinar is best in his flashbacks, and that is what empowered him to me as a character. And I think the Way of Kings as well, when he's kind of like realizing what he should and shouldn't do, and that
I will initial say, breakthrough. I think in Way of Kings he's the most compelling, and he is a lot more interesting of just really struggling, and he's getting challenged, and he's got this Sadeus who he believes is his old friend, and yes, they have differences, but you know, they've got the same goal, and then to have that challenged and find out that Sadeus really was stabbing him in the back the whole time,
right?
And that, you know, still being dealing with his brother's death and what that means, and just the turmoil of being in this position and not knowing how much power to have, how much power to take, how much power to give. But if he's making the right decisions and just not trusting himself. And I think then in the later books, he has more confidence in, and there's less of that. He's less of a compelling character now. And I think part of it's because the focus is on other characters who are dealing with their major struggles. And I think that will come back. But at the moment,
super fair. Yeah.
He is not the top.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. And I totally get it. Dalinar to me has ranked consistently high as one of my favorite characters. You know, generally speaking, top. If there was a period of time post Oathbringer where I was like 100% favorite character. Love him. Because I think that he does have a more complex moral sort of conversation going on. You know, the being a general, being in charge of annihilating people and like laying waste to cities and the complex relationship with his backstory and his wife and the old magic, you know.
And I guess as you bring that up, I do think that is actually, maybe it's just by recency. Like at the end of the fourth book, he's much less compelling. But the third book and the start of the fourth book, he's much more being challenged with this and this interaction with Taravangian, where Taravangian is kind of this like what he used to be. Of this, I have to make the hard decision.
Carbronk, you know, yeah.
I will destroy other people to get what I need to defend people. And anything is worth it if I achieve a result. And, you know, the morals are irrelevant as long as I achieve the result and take care of the people I've designated as good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that interplay is really interesting. But I think once Taravangian is fully outed as just a complete traitor, and I think that's...
About Vanji. Yeah, let's talk about Vanji. That's what I call him. Yeah. Anyway.
I guess just to finish up with Dalinar, I think when he has someone who he is challenging his morals is when he's at his most compelling. So when it's Sadeas, even when it's Elokar.
Yeah, or what was his name? Amaranth?
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't that the... Was that
Amaranth.
Sadeas' son?
No.
Amaram? Yeah.
Not Sadeas' son, but his, like, highest ranked soldier.
Yes. Yeah. Okay, that tracks. I was like, I haven't read these books in a couple of years, so, I mean, obviously I've read... correction. I just read Stormlight 5, so I'm very aware of a lot of it, but not 100% of it. Totally with you there. I think that he is best when he's bouncing off of other characters, too, like you're saying. It's sort of this moral juxtaposition, which is why I thought it was really fun for a portion of Rhythm of War in which he was being played against Taravangian, like you're saying, because he is best as a counterpoint or with a foil that makes him question his morals one way or another.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think Taravangian was really the perfect, like, test for Dalinar of like, no, it's okay. Mm-hmm. You can do the hard thing. That's what you were supposed to do. You can be the Blackthorn because you need to be like, that's your job. You have to take on that pain yourself so that others don't feel it. And then that gives you the okay to destroy others.
Right. Yeah. Oh man. And that makes such a tough quandary. I mean, truthfully for Dalinar on the whole, right. Is the sort of like central problem that he has with other people even being in charge remotely, like ceding control to the Alucard princes. In the end, he kind of ends up becoming, at the end of Rhythm of War, like in charge of a consortium, but it's very monarchy adjacent. Like, sure, everyone seems to sort of bend to him and Devani's opinion as opposed to considering a little bit more even-handedly others.
That is another thing where that consortium of all of these, it kind of comes together and then it just stops being a problem. It's like, okay, relevant. Everybody saw that you're right, and so we're just gonna do whatever you want.
Yeah, we're just listening. Cool.
Yep. Like, all right. Like, and it's one of those things where like it'll get brought up like, oh, the Azish are not happy with this, or like it's thrown out there, but it doesn't really have teeth. It doesn't feel like it's really a problem. It's more just almost a callback to when it was.
Yeah.
But Yeah.
Yeah. Her Daz, or God, what's her name? Queen Sen, I think.
Yes.
Who's the pirate queen, basically?
Yes.
Yeah. Of that port that's down south. Yeah, failing to recall the name, but a great little like character and subplot in and of itself. I realize that we focused a lot on Dalinar there. I wanted to bring it back, maybe did Shallan, and then throw in Adolin as a part of the conversation. I agree with you. I really love Shallan as a character. I feel like she really grew. I wouldn't call myself out on her, but I had similar complaints throughout the first book in my head and like otherwise. And I was like, all right, so Kaladin's like our 9 out of 10 character. Shallan's like a 7 out of 10. Cool. Like, not as good as Kaladin, but fine. And then through Words of Radiance, her backstory and more of the complexity, I was like, I was in throughout the whole thing. I feel like the Ghostbloods plot in and of itself, again, kind of like we were saying, has sort of been like a little bit befuddling.
Yeah.
in some ways where it's like it feels underbaked, where it's not spy-y enough at any point, where it feels like it should be. It feels like that's the whole point of her character.
Yeah, but it's like this secret spy organization, but then also it's a bigger thing in the Cosmere, but then also they're just kind of asking her to do these chores. It's just like this weird, like, I don't feel like I was able to get a real like handle on what they meant. Right. And I think that's,
or what they mean to Shallan even, you know?
Yeah. It seemed like to her, it was just this, almost this act of rebellion that initially it's like, okay, this is a connection to her family and she's trying to figure that out. But then that was like, I think at the end of the Words of Radiance, they, what's his name? The head of the Ghostbloods guy that she talks to.
It starts with the name Moraes. Yeah.
Moraes makes some comment about like endangering her family and she's just like, oh, they're fine. And it was like, oh, yeah. Okay. This your used to be like fine. Your entire driving part of your personality. And now it's just a thing that's like, you just brush off, whatever. And
yeah,
I guess on top of that, thing that I haven't really thought back on much is that Moraes gave her a dagger that could get a like capture a spren or like capture somebody's soul, and that like it was technology that was just being discovered by others, and he just had that. And so there is, I guess, that does kind of tie into this like outside influence that there's so much that. Everybody on everybody just does has forgotten or doesn't know.
Yeah there are like, it does add a little bit of
mystique.
Yes, yeah. That's exactly what I was going to say to the whole organization. I definitely agree with you. I think a similar kind of conversation could be had around the Sons of Honor, of whom kind of rotate around the central prologue of every book, right?
Yeah.
Or outside of it a little bit, in the spectrum of, you know, King Gavilar and his sort of secret order that was aspiring towards something.
Yeah.
It's an interesting beat. How do you feel about Gavilar? We'll return to other more normal characters, but Gavilar being, you know, the sort of like background death that kicks off the whole series.
Yeah, it's this interesting. I think the way that he's portrayed is interesting, how it changes.
Mm-hmm.
In the first few books, the first book is very much he was this great king and it's so sad that he's gone. Then it's like, well, you know, he had some flaws, and then it's like, well, he was kind of involved in this other
perspective,
stuff.
You're like,
yeah. Whoa. And then you, Dalinar's perspective, and you learn a lot more. And then Navani's perspective, but it's like, oh, he really actually was kind of awful. And the only reason like that Navani was with him was because she knew that he would take power, because that's right. Just who he was.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's presented previously as though he took power because Dalinar knew he shouldn't, but then it's like, no, actually he took power because he wanted to take power. And like, at least that's my impression.
Yeah. It's tough. I'm going to tell you, you're going to get some answers right away in the beginning of the next book, because that's the prologue, you know, that's been the prologue forever. So I don't personally, I have a hard time even getting into that one a little bit more than that, because I have some pretty firm answers now and I've got a pretty firm spot, but I definitely agree with you. It's one of the most complicated and I think interesting long-term plot threads, as you see sort of the development of information and what that means for, you know, the history of the world and also like a single character in his own right.
And I do think that's like, I think with some of the stuff Navani's discovering and how it's like Gavilar was on this different level and he had discovered things that they're still trying to discover. Mm-hmm. And so that's good to know because there is this like, okay.
I think it's satisfying in my opinion.
How did he get to this place? How did he have this knowledge? Where did it come from? Who else was involved in this? And also, I think it does just this, like, the idea that, like, the world keeps resetting of, like, this knowledge grows and then there's this massive desolation and all this knowledge is lost and they have to restart. And that is a very interesting concept. Like, all these things were there and there's just no record of
them. Right. Or especially because writing was discouraged. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah, the whole...
Literacy.
Yeah, being literate is gay thing is...
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very tough. But an important thing also for Dalinar to take on the other side and tackle it, right?
Yep.
Yeah. Totally with you there. So, let's talk about the Colan boys a little bit, because we've kind of missed them in the conversation, and they obviously directly connect to Dalinar. Adolin and Renarin, how do you feel about sort of two more sub-characters, but sort of their places in the world?
Adolin is again this very much like almost kind of pure person in mind where it's like he's very like I am honorable, like I am my own person, I don't just go along with my father, but he very much is like I just want to be a good person and that's my thing. I want to be good, I want to be like known for myself in my own right. I don't want to do what everybody else is. Like, I just want to do right. I think that's very... And I think now jumping into kind of the fourth book, and I mean, I think the whole plot with his Shardblade Maya, that was from the moment that he talked to her, I was like, oh, this is going to be a major plot point future. And as soon as there's the trial in Shadesmar, I was like, oh yeah, that Maya is going to be the thing that saves this because... Clearly, this is an important piece to know.
Yeah.
But I do think that that's like his purity is he was the only one to get through this. Like he's the only one that because even in the first book, like he was respectful to his sword and he always asked, like talked to his sword before every battle. And like looking back on that, I was like, oh, that was actually really cool. This jumping through. So it's I like him for that. But he also can be a somewhat limited character in that he is kind of just pure.
Sure. Yeah.
But
although simultaneously, he was the one who killed Sadeus in the end, you know, but like
in a way that to me, it just aligns with who he is of like he is so focused on like doing the right thing that in this moment he was so overcome by like this person who is just flagrantly doing the wrong thing and hurting other people that. Right. He's like, I have to end this. I can't allow this thing that's so counter to me to exist. And so that didn't bother me as much. I was like, this makes sense.
Yeah, I was down with him killing Sadeus. I was entirely on board. And I thought it made sense. I do see the argument of it being sort of a passionate kind of move. And I think the only thing that I would push against with is while logical, it feels like it hasn't been fully addressed from him psychologically in some ways. Obviously, he's been like questioning, are people going to like think that it's me or like, are they going to know or, you know, all these other things or hold him accountable in some way. And I feel like that hasn't came to a head, but.
Yeah. And I will also say that him killing Sadeus in that was a very convenient like plot point of just. We're going to move past this. Sadeus was this massive problem. And I think at the point where they were in Yirithiru.
And a big fucking villain. He was such a good villain. He was like such the a good villain.
Yeah. But it was like we've moved beyond the level of petty infighting to now this global conflict. And so Sadeus no longer fits in that global conflict. And so he has to go.
It's fair. Sadeus feels like a character that belongs in Game of Thrones to some degree.
For sure. He's kind of. Can't think of the guy's name.
He's very Littlefinger-esque.
Yes,
that's the first person that I'm thinking. Okay, yeah.
That is, if I think of Sadeus, I picture Littlefinger.
Fair, and I super agree with that. I think that he is very reminiscent therein, a little bit more maniacal. And I think, does he die in Oathbringer? It's Oathbringer, right? I think that's when he gets killed.
I think so.
I think that's when he dies. He becomes a little bit more mustache twirly than I would love. He was very like casual and developed. And I think, like, again, the conflict outscaled him. And so then he started to feel mustache twirly as opposed to diabolically, personally villainous.
But I think
the scale of things.
I would agree with that. It was like, at first it was like he and Dalinar had ultimately like this same goal,
mm-hmm.
but different methods of going about it, which made this like, again, the strong moral dilemma with Dalinar. But then it was just like, oh no, he's just plotting because he wants power. And
Dalinar doesn't deserve the power or the gemstones.
Yeah.
What are you going to do with all that wealth and all of those princes under your command? Yeah, it does kind of bend that way a little bit. Yeah, definitely understand. Okay, so we have a couple more, I think, to cover here. Nivani, there's so many characters in this damn series. Nivani, you made mention of earlier. She really becomes, I think, a core focal point, obviously, in Rhythm of War.
Yeah.
Pairs up well with Venli, Ashnine, Raboniel as sort of like conversation pieces about the whole thing. How do we feel about science girls?
I do like the science girls. Like, again, it's not a standout piece, but I enjoy the parts that she's in, where it's like, it's almost like a little soothing break of like, yes, there's a lot of stress happening, but mostly we're just doing cool science stuff.
Right.
You know, like I'm going to do my cool science shit and carry on from there. It's like, okay, now we'll go back to the life or death situation. But for now,
With Kaladin literally pulling a Die Hard in event somewhere.
Meanwhile, Navani's like, I want to make some traps.
Yeah. She's like, in the future, this is going to be super useful.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree with you. I really appreciated that portion of Rhythm of War. I do feel like I mentioned earlier, kind of got into the weeds a little bit too much in places and was a little too aggressively forward, maybe, with its descriptions, like not needing to reiterate things. Quite as often or as deeply. Trust the reader a little bit more, you know? Yep. Like, that's kind of the perspective that I
have. And I guess there is, I can understand that there's also, I think you and I have a pretty good understanding of physics, but not all readers are going to. So there's a balance of trying to explain, but not over-explain. And I think honestly that he did a good job of balancing it out where.
Yeah.
I didn't feel like it was too over-explained, but it definitely was like, okay, I do get what's happening here. But I guess for me, it still kept the like joy of it without...
True. Yeah.
Without losing that, without just being like, okay, I get it. Let's go. Come on.
I had a little bit more of the latter than the former, personally. And that could be the fact that I spent a lot of my life reading hard, hard science fiction. Stephen Baxter and, you know, Arthur C. Clarke being on the lighter side of things. But I definitely understand, and I guess that's probably more where that comes from. And they're obviously not nearly as deeply personal or popular of writers, and so they have to write to the audience level that's also engaging with their books. Like, simultaneously, you want to keep people engaged and not confuse them. So
yep.
I get it. Definitely get it. With that in mind, I think maybe the final one that I want to focus on, then we can talk about books individually beyond The Way of Kings, I think we hit. And probably most of Wards of Radiance. Zeth. How do we feel about Zeth?
I love Zeth.
Love Zeth. Cool. And Vanji. Those are the two. But yeah. Terra Vanjian. Sorry.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yep.
I call him old Vanji anyway.
Zeth is... I just like that, again, he is the counterpart to Adolin to me. He is,
sure.
He is very pure. And he's like, this is my thing. And then he's like, well, I've been told that I now have to just follow this. I don't have a choice. And he cries, but he does it because that's his job.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the scenes of him just absolutely massacring people are like incredibly well written, horrifying, but very well written.
So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he's, and then I think him just coming back through and like he got this second chance at life and he chose not to go with like, take the easier route and to follow Dalinar as he's like, I've seen this one person that is like the ideal that I want to be, that is confident in like, and I can trust and chooses to follow Dalinar instead of Odium. And that's, I think from there, like he's he's just been very cool. And now him like fighting with this sword that just wants to destroy everything when mm-hmm. like that's literally what he did, was destroy everything for so long. Now he like has to practice restraint, and in a way else the restraint that he always wished he had, but mm-hmm. now he has to actively try and practice it. But I do like him a lot.
There's a natural resistance there between him and Nightblood, right? Like, because mm-hmm. there's a draining effect on him when he pulls Nightblood, but simultaneously, yeah. like, is there the need to actually do this and use you? You know, there's a great context there and a great conversation. And Zeth is definitely the right yep. character for that conversation.
Definitely.
Totally with you. Yeah. Teravangian.
I love what has happened with him. And I just.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
I love.
That's an interesting phrase. Yeah.
Him. Because it was interesting the way it started off, where it's like, oh, he's just this old fool who just is kind and takes care of people, to he's a mastermind, to, well, he is an old fool, but he also is a mastermind, but only for one day. And then
the pattern.
The pattern. And how that influenced, like, it's this massive background scheme that influences so much of the books. Is this pattern that he's done, that's Amaram is following the pattern, and you mm-hmm. know, it's all these other pieces there, and him, you know, fully going over to Odium and, you know, accepting that. And then even at, you know, towards the end of Rhythm of War, going, you know, and still trying to like kill Odium and being like mm-hmm. in his
becoming
dumb,
Odium.
In his dumb state, being like, no, I shouldn't have done this, and realizing that Odium is fallible and there's, you know, a way to defeat him, and then becoming Odium, and now it's like, oh crap. Now Odium is smart. And I think the final little bit with Wit and Odium was mm-hmm. like a very scary, like, oh, it felt like
he takes away his memory, right? Yeah.
It's like, oh, Odium went from this just passionate force that's just like so sure of itself and like, yep, this is like, I know what I'm doing, I can see the future, everything, like everything is under control, to, oh, I'm going to think and process and plot, and like, yeah, it's, I think it went from like a very much hopeful and like, yeah, Dalinar can do this, he's gonna win, to like, it's going to get a lot more complicated.
Yeah, now that we've swapped out our kings on the chessboard, it's a little different.
Yeah.
Yeah. I definitely agree with you there. But it makes for a very interesting piece. I agree with you. Teravangian is one of those characters that I never viewed as the villain up until the end, like close, basically Rhythm of War. I mean, he had some villainous moments, but he had counterpoints of like, there is sort of a delicate balance. There's sort of a secret society angle to him where it's like, you have ideas, you have thoughts, there's clearly a complex system here, but you were never going to rise to that level.
I think that's really something that Brandon Sanderson has done very well, is just giving everybody a good reason for why mm-hmm. they're doing things, and giving you this like, okay, I get why they're doing that. It's awful. You shouldn't be doing that, but I understand where you have this moral, where you feel you have a moral backing to do this.
Yeah.
And pushing your perspective around and going, oh, okay, well, I see why you're doing that. Don't do it, but I get mm-hmm. it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, makes for good storytelling, right? I realize we've dug deep on a lot of these characters. We didn't necessarily talk about Kaladin more deeply, but I do think that, like, he's Johnny Stormlight. He's a great character. Depression is core and key, and I think Brandon identifies and doesn't identify himself, but sits with that and, like, registers it well on a character level.
Key and core is my least favorite phrase. I had an old CEO that used to say that, and he is awful.
Did what? Said
key and core all the time.
Oh.
We may have made it into a drinking game at one point, but...
Fair enough. I don't think I say it that often.
No, but it brings me bad memories.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad juju.
Yeah.
Get it. But Kaladin, yeah? Anything else on Kaladin? Johnny Stormlight?
Yeah, I think... The fact they managed to keep him an interesting character while also, yes, being just Johnny Stormlight, I think him, like, getting actually... It was good to, like, okay, we actually have to pull him out. Like, he can't keep being the guy for everything all the time. Like, he can't handle that and dealing with depression and like shutting down and
the emotion of it all.
Yeah. And now at the end of Rhythm of War, kind of rediscovering himself, there's a little bit of like inevitable kind of story arc that you can expect that to happen.
Mm-hmm.
However, I think that it was done pretty well. So
fair enough. Okay. So I do want to continue and I want to verge into our predictions here sooner than later. But I do want to, before we go too much further there, talk about each book itself, right? So the way that I think is the most logical to do this is for you to rank the books and then talk about them individually and how you feel about them on the whole. We've talked about some of them at length. I think Rhythm of War more than most. But, you know, like, where do they sit? I don't need numbers necessarily, but amongst themselves, how would you rank the books?
Okay.
Feelings. Yeah.
And again, this is still going back to a very mushed through
recency bias, subjective.
Biased. I think last, I'll try and start last to first, even though this is
love that
harder. Yep. I think Wave Kings is last for me.
Okay.
And I think some of that's because it's the first one I read, and some of it's just how you just feel, it doesn't feel as relevant because how much the world has moved on from what was happening in Way of Kings. Like, it was a good book on its own, but looking in the context of the greater story, it's not that relevant.
Sure.
Then I think Words of Radiance, I think just because it's still so much building, there's a lot of cool in that book.
Okay, a lot of cool in the book.
And as I remember more, I may change this, but this is just me kind of what I'm
off the cuff, don't worry about it.
Like, I think there's a lot of discovery in that book, there is a lot of cool, but it's still, again, I think just because it's earlier, I'm not giving it quite as much. Next, Rhythm of War.
Yep.
And I think that is brought back, like, it's interesting, it's good, but there is a lot of the science stuff and a lot of this like jumping around, and like, I was waiting, and we talked about this, I'm waiting forever for the trial in Shadesmar,
which was the best part of the story, and I wish there was so much more of it too, but yeah,
I wish that had been ongoing as everything else is happening, instead of like it hard cut from that for a long time and then come back and kind of get through it fairly quickly. I really wish that had been this like ongoing trial drama in the background, and it had been like this long drawn out thing of like a multi-day evidence,
because of course the honors friend would be that way.
I will say that like the way that the honors friend are portrayed in that is not the way that they've been portrayed, but it also is, I mean,
they're the disagreeable ones, though. They're the ones who don't want to bond, which is I think an approachable part of the conversation too.
True. And then I think Oathbringer is my first. I think just because everything has kind of come together and it's this, the culmination of everything in the first two books kind of really explodes out. And yeah, I think it's, you've got your Ethereu, you've got all these other things that kind of come together, and it feels like the world has expanded, and it's like, we've arrived at the real story now. And I think that I like that the most.
Love that. That is an interesting ranking. It differs from my own. I mean, with four books, do you say considerably or inconsiderably? It's completely different, actually, than mine. So I'm not going to rank the fifth book just for this sake, and I don't want to leave you with any impressions as a part of this conversation. But in my opinion, my least favorite book is Rhythm of War, because it feels the most distracted of any of the novels. It feels the most that's sort of divided. We almost don't get into characters' heads enough in different moments and other things like that. So to me, Rhythm of War, still a good book, my least favorite of the group. I then am really torn between second and third place, like really close. Any day of the week you could ask me and I'd feel differently. Today, I'm putting Oathbringer in third and Way of Kings in second. I love the highlights. I love all of the things that you brought up as like incredible highlights of Oathbringer. It was for a time my favorite Stormlight book. I've softened on it a little bit more in hindsight. And that's, I don't need to get into necessarily like full specifics, but Dalinar's flashbacks are great. But I feel like Sanderson himself as a writer avoided tackling some really difficult topics like colonialism a little bit more directly and kind of just like waved it away in the end. And I was kind of that's left me with a more bitter taste on my like reread that I did part of Oathbringer on leading into God, I almost said Last Argument of Kings. That's not right. Win in Truth. And yeah, I really like it though. Still, it's just one of those that's like a high level gripe where I'm like, I love that in epic fantasy generally. Why didn't we get into that a little bit more?
And I guess as you bring that up, I remember thinking some of that, of like this, that there were some of those topics that just weren't really covered.
Right.
But I definitely have some recency bias of in the way that I experienced them too. But
it's still torn though for me. Like I said, it's second or third on any given day. Yeah.
I think going back through them more thoroughly and given some time, especially I think after I read the next book, I may have a different ranking.
Which will be the plan. We will obviously talk about it when you finish it, so you can give it some thought. So Way of Kings then ends up today in second place. Part of me is also like, I love the lower to the ground nature of that story, which is the reason that I think I feel higher about it at the moment. And I love the language. I think that's the one thing that sort of softens over time over the course of the story is Sanderson feels more like an old school epic fantasy writer at first, and then it sort of becomes more modern over time. And there's nothing innately wrong with that outside of the fact that it makes me yearn in the later books for more of that. If that makes sense.
That's fair. I think that is true.
It's gotten more complex, so he has to explain more plainly, and that's just part of the nature of the thing.
Yeah.
Which leaves Words of Radiance as my favorite book, and it is my favorite book by a country mile. The moments with Shallan and Kaladin in the chasm are incredible. The confrontation of the various personalities I thought were great. The ghost bloods are the weakest part of the whole story, though, to your point, and otherwise. But Words of Radiance also explores Shadesmar really deeply for the first time, and like that idea is incredible.
I still think Shadesmar is weirdly like this thing that kind of, yes, they kind of start to explore it, but then it very much jumps from this thing that nobody knows about to just an accepted part of the world,
right?
Like, and I think that that's,
there's some logical like jumps that just happen from time to time.
And I'd like to talk a little bit just kind of about the story arc in general of, I do think that happens a fair number of times. That is probably one of my biggest gripes, is just like with the magic system, with Shadesmar, with these different things where we jump.
This character figured it out. Everyone knows it.
Yeah. We jump from this is a major point of contention to everyone accepts this. And it's pretty quick. But on the flip side, what I do appreciate, and I'm about to throw some shade to another book series, I appreciate the growing action and the way that it grows, and there's setbacks, but it's not this like, because it's separated out enough with these different storylines, one person can be devastated while there's still kind of this growth happening elsewhere, or a certain other book series that you're very known
you're
for.
You're talking about Red Rising.
I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
But in what context? I'm so curious. Yeah.
Red Rising, it's too much. Big up, massive crash. Big up, massive crash. Big up, massive crash.
Fair.
And
there's a good amount of that. Yeah.
I love Red Rising. I will continue reading them. But
have you read Lightbringer? Have we talked about this? Did you read? Okay, I forgot. Who hasn't? My dad fucking hasn't at this point. It's been like a year and change.
Rude.
Yeah, seriously, though.
That's just my dig that I had to throw in. I love the Red Rising books, but that is my biggest thing. Is it's like, it's happened enough times now that I'm just, anytime anything good is happening, I'm waiting for it all to get crushed.
You're waiting for the grim, dark crush. Yeah. You're waiting for the George R. R. Martin crush. It's the same. Yeah, same idea. Yeah.
But this is, I think it's a more hopeful arc.
Yeah.
And it continues to grow. And like, there's always this darkness lurking out of sight that you're aware is there, like waiting to crush them. And in some cases, really crushing them. Like, Urithiru being overtaken is this huge thing. But I think the way that he separated out, where it's like, Dalinar doesn't even know what's happening. He's fighting his own fight. He's succeeding in his own fight. And, you know, dealing with all of this stuff is, it allows it to keep feeling like there's progress forward rather than like everything that they worked for has been thrown out.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that to some degree also brings us back to one of the reasons that I'm pretty high on both Oathbringer and Words of Radiance is Alucard. I think is an excellent character that is really deeply Elokar. Sorry, not Alucard. Elokar is a yes. great character that is explored between those two books, and his death is a tragedy in many ways as he seems to be turning a corner finally near the end. And it is sort of one of those things that still hits deep between those.
I think it is. I think that this Elokar is a character who starts off being very much like the rich kid's son that just kind right. of is yeah. got thrown into power, and he's not very good at it. But he throws his weight around in ways that he probably shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And then to someone who, again, he has this major struggle similar to Kaladin's own, where it's like he loses all confidence in himself, where he's like, I'm really bad at this job. Mm-hmm. What, the imposter syndrome is real. And although in his case, he kind of was an imposter for a while, but truly. He just needed to learn.
Yeah.
And then at the point where he's finally starting to regain some confidence in himself and learning what his limits are and what he should do, then he dies. And of course, he dies from Moash, which... Ooh.
We also didn't fucking talk about it at all.
We got to talk about...
yeah. I do want to wrap this up into sort of a larger... I'll end my point on Words of Radiance being my favorite book, and then we'll move into villainy in general in the series, because this is a great talking point. Words of Radiance is my favorite book for all of the reasons that I've highlighted. In addition, the escalation of Stormlight in a proper way, in my opinion, in that final conflict between Seth and Kaladin is incredible. The battles that actually happened between Eshonai and the listener forces.
Yeah.
And Alethkar is incredible. Like that whole sequence as it plays out.
Those boom,
incredible.
In my head, those are an Oathbringer.
There are more in Oathbringer. Yes. There's an initial sort of like skirmish. Oathbringer is when it all explodes, and that's when it becomes like a full fledged like war. And effectively,
I think that is once I got to Words of Radiance, that's where I really got into it. And so from there, I've been listening nonstop until
fair. Yeah, last they do week. Kind of blur together even for me, man. I totally get it. Fair enough. So Words of Radiance, villainy though.
Yes.
Or what you were going to ask.
I was going to say, I think next time I will do a deeper dive on the books and figure out where the stopping points are. And I will definitely have a different ranking.
Sure. Yeah.
I remember.
It's real. The real conflict does come to head, but there are still the Bridge Four is still running bridges outside of Kaladin himself at the end of Words of Radiance, which is where you get like Teft and a number of other people kind of coming to the surface as, you know, Kaladin breaks away into the sky battle with Zeth, which is a Dragon Ball Z fight.
Oh, yeah.
That's entirely what it is. Yeah.
Truly one of the best moments in the series.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. It's so well portrayed, and it does feel very anime-ish, and I'll keep saying that, but simultaneously there isn't much of that in epic fantasy, so it's also refreshing in some ways.
It was this like this thing that like had crossed my mind of like, well, what if he's on Stormlight, what if he's in the storm?
Yeah.
Like right. And I was like, "Oh, all right, we got there."
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good old Johnny Stormlight. Okay, villainy. And villains in the Stormlight series, including Moash, obviously Teravangi and Sadeas, we've given some time under the sun, Elokar to some degree, the Pursuer, the Unmade, what's the other group? Just the casual, like, foot soldiers. What are they
the
called?
The Singers?
Not the Singers. The Singers is a culture within the species.
Man. The Parshendi?
The Parshendi is the species, so we're there. I'm looking for... Now I'm going to look it up. The immortal ones, though, that get killed and then return. Oh,
the Fused.
The Fused. That's it. I was like, God, it's got to be one of those. But yeah, there's so many different forms. How do you feel about evil in this series as a force, as like a culture, the Unmade, sort of all these different elements?
I think I want to talk about Moash quick, and then I'll go...
Moash first. Yeah, Moash first. Because we haven't talked about Moash at all somehow. Yeah.
I think the Moash... Kaladin, that initial bit was very out of place for me. I didn't like it.
Initially, you mean like from
like
that, Words of Radiance ish, which when or and into Oathbringer when like he when does it
gets,
the assassination?
When it
or?
Gets into this when it goes from Moash has a thing like is like hates Elokar to no, I'm actually part of a plot to kill him, and Kaladin's still like not doing something about that.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's where I was like No, it again, it fell into this like Shallan, like you're doing the stupid thing and for no reason. Mm-hmm. Like there's not really any value.
And he still had the light eyes, dark eyes problem, but it wasn't pronounced enough in the story for it to make logical sense.
No, they had moved past that enough that it just felt very out of place, I think. And
Moash gets mustache twirly for me. I'm with you. I'm on your side of the fence.
But I think where Moash ends up, where he is now, where he's this like tortured person who is like bound to Odium because he cannot handle the pain that he has created in his life. And so his only option to move forward is to be bound to Odium, who will take the pain away from him.
Sure.
And yeah. I think that's he's good. A better villain now. Him, when it was like going after Elikar,
that's interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way personally. I think I have more problems. I think it's acceptable, and I think it's also the path that he was on to like end up where he is. But I don't feel, I've said this a couple of times over a couple of different shows now, the destination, I think, makes sense. The journey to get there doesn't, which is so counterintuitive to the core thesis of this story, which is journey before destination, right? Yeah.
And I think they like did some build up to bring to the point where Moash would just kill Elikar directly, but
the
way that it happened still felt like, I don't know, I felt like there should have been more pressure on Moash to be like, is this truly what I want? Like, and maybe I'm not remembering it entirely, but it feels like Moash was just like, yep, no, I'm killing this guy. It felt like there was so much internal struggle that it was just like out the window. And I guess the whole point of that is kind of Odium was taking that.
Right. But he was leeching it away from him. But simultaneously, is it well explained enough to make sense to you? You know, that's important
too. To me, it wasn't.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I'm with you. I definitely get it. Moash is a character that I personally struggle with for a number of reasons, but that is definitely a core one of them, is that in the end, in Rhythm of War, his personal journey makes a ton of sense. His goal of making Kaladin commit suicide is one of the most, I mean, it makes sense for Kaladin's character. It doesn't make sense that that's the way that Moash would extract vengeance or like need to like build that way.
I agree. That has also been one where it's like, okay, I get it that this, but to me, that's like the most brutal possible way to get rid of Kaladin. And I don't buy the Kaladin can't be killed thing. It's like, okay, you think that, but they should have lent more into like the only way to kill Kaladin is for him to do it himself versus like, I'm just going to make Kaladin so unbelievably depressed that he thinks this is the only option.
And Teft's death definitely broke me like it broke Kaladin, but still.
Oh, Teft finally has like gotten himself together. He's gone through all this awful thing. He's finally together. And now he's gone.
Yeah.
But
brutal.
Moash is like apathy towards everything doesn't lend itself to, I'm going to make Kaladin so depressed that he kills himself.
Mm-hmm.
It lends it to like, now, if I give the option, I'm just going to kill him immediately.
Yeah, man. It doesn't, it's like holding a punch, you know, in a lot of different ways. And it doesn't feel right for the character. That was one of my biggest gripes with Rhythm of War, is I don't feel like that conflict made sense. Excuse me. The Pursuer in Kaladin's conflict makes a ton of sense. Moash as adjacent to the rest of the plot is where I personally, you know, struggled.
The Pursuer is the perfect embodiment of the Odium's weakness. Is this just pure passion doesn't get you anywhere? Because that's all, to me, that's what the Pursuer is. He's pure passion. Right. He's just like, I kill, and anybody that kills me, I kill them. That's all it's.
I hunt. Yeah.
Yep. I hunt. And now to destroy that, that's like a symbol that Odium can be beaten to me. It's like to continuously beat the Pursuer and to do it without his full abilities. Like that was a symbol that Odium can be beaten. And then you have this sideline with Moash, where Moash really should be like, he is Odium's servant 100%.
Yes.
And he's like, yeah, I'm not going to kill you. I'm going to make you sad.
Yeah. I'm going to depress you.
Yeah.
Which to some degree, like there's certain effective notes in that, but we don't reach the point, in my opinion. Again, that's why I personally rate Rhythm of War a little bit lower in my own estimation. Part of the reasons. Okay. So before we move on to predictions, I have one more thing. I have two more things. Favorite flashback segments thus far. How'd you feel about each of the books and their flashbacks themselves? You know, what was your favorite? What did you like? What didn't you like about each of them?
It's hard to remember the flashbacks.
Kaladin, Shallan, and then third one's Dalinar. Fourth one is Venli and Ashenai.
Kaladin, I enjoyed.
Yep.
His flashbacks, like, I think that was very good story building. Shallan
directly integrated into the plot, too. Yes. I just want to say, like, it's more immediate than any of the other flashbacks.
Shallan's less so because it was like it was interesting in the time of her story building. But again, it's this larger like, what are the ghost bloods? What's going on? Why do I care about this?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, it's important to her individual's like character development, but it doesn't build into the story as a whole, I think, as much as Kaladin's development and what he's gone through directly impacts so much of what's happening. Dalinar's flashbacks are brutal and I think that those may be my favorite.
They're sick as fuck. They're great. I love Dalinar's flashbacks.
It's just like this, because he's this like very reasoned, like I'm questioning myself. I need to think through things to go back to this time where he was an alcoholic mass murderer. And like with no qualms about what was happening is a very interesting just like juxtaposition of who he is now and what he was and what he's terrified of becoming. And I think I think it's the best because that defines his choices. Is he is terrified of being that person. That's why he can't ever be Taravangian, because he did that. He did it himself.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows the consequences. Yeah. Whereas Taravangian has ordered those things to be done, but he hasn't done it himself.
Right. Makes them great counterpoints instead of the story as well.
That's what makes Dalinar make the right decisions, is that he has made all the wrong decisions and he has learned from them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's also part of the reason that Oathbringer rips as a book is because you have the confluence immediately of the flashbacks. And then you also have actively him fighting against who he was before. There's also the central mystery of what happened to his wife and otherwise, and the brutal reality therein. You know, it gives it an emotional punch.
Yeah. And also, I think that's like the start of the getting cultivation involved and that's interesting. Venli's flashbacks they're probably third in that they're incredibly informational, but not as entertaining.
Like, super fair. Yeah.
I'm enjoying them because it's filling a lot of gaps and it's helping to better understand
the Parshendi.
Yeah. And again, as a complex people, they're not just the enemy,
mm-hmm.
especially this, they're the original inhabitants of this planet.
Mm-hmm.
This is their home.
Which is the big reveal of Rhythm of War, right? Is that like we thought it was the other way and then it turns out we were so wrong.
Which I will say that was also pretty quickly glossed over.
Yes. Agreed. Agreed.
Like
the true desolation and the void bringers, you know, who were the void bringers really.
Again, it just became like an accepted thing pretty quickly. But
yeah, that's one of my bigger gripes with the series on the whole is it does wash over and we don't feel like the character level impacts of individual things from time to time. I've got one particular gripe in the fifth book with that I think I feel very aggressively, but it's in relation. It's the same sort of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So yeah, I think Dalinar, cool. Kaladin, Venli, then Shallan.
Cool. All right. Interesting. Different than the general fan consensus, which is always fun.
What is the general fan consensus?
I think generally it's considered Kaladin and or Shallan, depending on people's opinions, and then Venli like a distant fourth, like Venli Ashenai, like really far down. Yeah. People didn't like Rhythm of War for like weird reasons that I don't agree with. I think that you and I agree similarly on liking things. People had other problems with it. I don't know.
I think for, at least for me, like the learning more about the world works for me. Like I want to understand, like, and it's explained in such a way that I can understand it.
Right.
So it's like, oh, these things that have been kind of like thrown out there is just this thing that exists. Now
I want to know about the chasm feeds. I want to know about
because the chasm feeds are just kind of a what exactly is going on. They were this thing, like this huge thing, and then they're nothing. And now it's like getting a little bit more explanation of like what was going on is interesting to me. Like I want to learn those things. Me thinking back to this, like connecting the dots from previous books, that does it for me. And I think for a lot of people, it's like, I don't care. Give me more story. Give me more action. Move forward.
Right.
But I think
I get it.
And I think being into like reading all of the extended universe of Star Wars, getting really deep into these large universes, like you and I are have a better like appreciation for the nuance of those details that some people just don't because they just want the story.
Right. There was a part of some reviews that came out for book five where they're like, why was that brought up? And I was like, because I fucking love that shit, because there are people that love that. And that's important as a part of the story.
Yeah.
And without getting into specifics, but I am so with you on that front. Like I want, while the story has progressed in a lot of ways, I feel like we've lost sense to some degree of like the flora, the fauna, the physical world itself. And so it's part of the reason that I really liked Rhythm of War in the flashbacks compared to a lot of people. I think I'm pretty much with you for the most part. I don't think that there are any flashbacks that suck or that are even like low tier. I would probably equate Shallan and Venli's in my own opinion, but
I have some thoughts on the flora and fauna, but I will keep that for my predictions.
Sure. Love that. Cool. The final thing that I wanted to talk about before we talk about predictions, and I realized that I didn't put in the notes, is the heralds and sort of the other side of the wide scope of history on the planet itself. How do you feel about the ages past and the heralds?
The heralds and the fused are this weird juxtaposition of like
desolations, Ahuratiam, like all these things.
In a way, it's like the heralds and the fused are almost at the same level, but there's 10 heralds and there's an absurd number of fused. And
right.
Like an undefined number of fused.
Mm-hmm.
The heralds are all insane at this point, and it's my. So this is me throwing out my theory. I think
this fits into predictions almost directly. But yeah,
I think that the heralds are just people who reached a certain level of ideal that's very hard to get to.
Cool,
and that's my theory because it's like okay, why? What's different in the way that the fused are versus like. In a way, I get it, where it's like the void spren are taking full control of the body versus the just normal spren are working alongside a human.
Right.
But it's still this like weird, okay, but the void spren just keep coming back and back and back, and the humans and their spren, like if one of them dies, it's this massive thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's this weird like trying to understand the difference there.
Mm-hmm.
That's
right. Especially between the heralds, like not even including the Knights Radiant. Yeah.
Yep. So yeah, understanding like how, what are the heralds? I still don't have a good grasp on exactly how they fit into this other than that they're like, they have stayed through and it's almost like these are the people chosen by the gods or the shards to keep through whatever reason there is for this cycle of desolations. It does feel like, and I think some of the things Odium said, where it's like, this is the training for a larger war. Mm-hmm. It feels like that's what Roshar is they've just created this cycle of continuous war and growth and rebirth for some outside goal.
To sharpen the blade.
Yeah. And so it's almost like the heralds were supposed to be the stewards of that to like guide through, but now they've gone so far that they've all gone insane, and the fused are also on their side have mostly gone insane. But
yeah,
I do want to know more.
Cool. All right. curious because they are such like a critical point to some degree in the story. Yeah. You know, obviously, like we do see a couple even more than once. I mean, Nail has actually been on the planet for almost the entire duration of the story, right? Mm-hmm. Especially as a mentor to Zeth, as a part of his part of the story. There's Taln and Shalanosh and Chana, I think, have all variously shown up. Yeah, it's interesting. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I'll say that you're missing because you don't have the physical books is the end papers. Each one is a herald pair on the end papers, and they're so cool. I think on Audible also, there's a PDF. So I think you should be able to flip through it still and see it if you download it.
There probably is. I'll flip that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's on the app. They're like half a gig, I think, each. So it's substantial. There's a lot of stuff, but.
Makes sense.
Cool. All right. So I think that fits perfectly. And I even took down one of those ideas and thoughts as a prediction. So where do you think this is heading for Wind and Truth? Obviously, it's out. I've physically read it, so I'm not going to react too much to your thoughts here.
I already have it on Audible.
Enjoy it. Yeah.
Well, I've just been delaying starting off.
Yes. Yeah. Specifically for this conversation. Yeah. So what's she thinking? Where's your brain? Where it's heading? We got 10 days until the conflict with Odium.
So I'm just going to start from a world building perspective, because that's kind of where I was thinking before. I'm excited to see how Urethira works.
Sure. Like,
that's one of the things I'm most excited for. I want to know how all of the technology in Urethira
works. Is it a spaceship?
Works.
Yeah.
Yeah. What's going on here? And just to understand that now that it's fully active.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
If there's like
Urethira,
the first quarter of the book talking about that, I would be happy with it.
Okay. All right.
Not quarter of the book because they're long, but
fair enough.
Yeah. I think that there's going to be, I'm curious, either the 10 days are going to be very fast and it's going to like be just this rush of quick action, get there, and there's going to be a result that then snowballs into something else, or it's going to be dragged out for quite a long time.
Fast or slow. That is a difficult prediction to render as a thought. We'll talk about it.
Very slow.
Yeah. Do you have a preference towards one or the other?
I think I would rather have it be fast because I understand that this is book 5 of 10 and I know that it's going to keep going on from here. So I'd rather not drag on too much.
Sure.
And clearly the way that the contract is written with Odium, no matter what happens, there's going to be continued fallout.
Right.
Yeah. I would rather it happen quicker to continue moving the story than drag on or a reframing of those 10 days in like some sort of change now that Taravangian has taken over Odium and now it's not 10 days. Something like that. Or some sort of way to weasel out of that agreement.
Mm-hmm. Okay, fair. Work around with the agreement to work around the 10 days. Got it. Where else? What else is on your brain, your radar, your mind?
I just, at this point, I want them to just open up the magic system. Let's get cultivation going. The conversation between cultivation and Odium at the end is messy. I'm also waiting for Honor to come back because that's inevitable in my mind. Honor isn't dead. Honor is in some ways still there. I expect that that's going to happen. But yes, I do want to know more about cultivation, how that works. Yeah, let's...
Real quick, before we proceed too much further on that, have you read either Edge Dancer or Dawn Shard, the two novellas? I'm just going to recommend for you both of them before, and I'm so sorry that you have to listen to more Stormlight, different Stormlight before this. Edge Dancer is Lyft and is Lyft's story, and also Yonagon and Aesir. It's very interesting. In the end, I think we didn't talk about Lyft. How do you feel about Lyft? Real quick,
I like Lyft.
Buzzer. I fucking hate Lyft. I think Lyft is one of the worst written characters in history. I think that Brandon Sanderson using the awesome the way that he does is so countertextual. I love the rest of her character, but every time she says awesome, it rips me out of the story.
Okay.
It's like I'm getting teleported to a different dimension.
And I could see
outside of that, I like Lyft.
I think genuinely. So did you listen to that part or did you read it?
I not only listened to that, but I also listened to Edge Dancer, which is about Lyft. And I, oh my God, problems. It doesn't change the context problem for me. But
I think the awesomeness is annoying, but it's...
It gets better. It also gets much better as the story progresses.
Yeah.
But, oh my God, there are a few characters that I like genuinely are and was as mad about as early Lyft on the page.
I think Lyft I'm okay with because just they're just so out of left field from the rest of it.
Very true and fair.
It's, it doesn't bother me to have this like harsh turn for a little bit and then back to the usual.
Super fair. A release valve like that is important in storytelling. It specifically was the word awesome and awesomeness in those internal descriptions.
Yeah.
Ugh. But that was just my own personal gripe. Anyway, but I really like Lyft otherwise as a character. And also, I really liked her in Rhythm of War. I think that like Brandon calmed it down a little bit, chilled it out. I think when you read Edge Dancer, you might have a firmer understanding of why I didn't as much. Because, my God.
I don't know if I can get through a whole book about Lyft.
It's only 200 pages.
Okay.
So it's a couple of hours.
Let's see if I can actually read that one.
Yeah. You could read it, or there's a short story collection that he has that's like, I want to say it's like 16 hours an audiobook. You can't listen to them all out of order, but you could do those two. And then you can come back to the other ones, you know, when necessary. That was one of the books that I had him sign when I met him, was my Arcanum Unbounded. Okay. Anyway, sorry. That was a side tangent. I realized we hadn't talked about Lyft at all. Kind of a big deal in some ways. Okay. So, you were talking about Cultivation Honor coming back in the story, Odium being a big deal, obviously, and kind of the end of seeing the larger picture with the shards to some degree.
Yeah. The 10 days, something for me, the 10 days is not going to be very relevant. I'm not
sure.
That doesn't make me like, oh my God, these 10 days, it's got to happen. I'm just waiting. Something's going to happen to change the scope of that conflict or continue a new conflict beyond that, whatever the resolution of that is.
Cool.
And I think there's just been so much introduced. Clearly, Taravangian Nizodium is not going anywhere.
You think that, like, is he going to be ousted?
No, I don't think so. I think that Taravangian...
Oh, going anywhere. Yeah, sorry, I thought
he's
not
going anywhere.
He's not going to accomplish anything. And I was like, whoa.
I think he's too big of a character. This is my meta observation. Mm-hmm. Too big of a character to eliminate in this single conflict. So that won't happen. Okay. Cultivation obviously has been like on the outskirts with the old magic and with Lyft. Mm-hmm. And like there's this whole other world that has to get involved that I definitely want to see. And then that Honor being dead is too much of a plot point to not be fake.
Fair.
I guess I shouldn't say fake, but to be proven wrong.
Not misleading.
Yeah.
Right.
Like it's pushed too much as a major plot point to not be a huge reveal that I expect is going to happen either in this book or be prepped in this book.
Cool. Those are good.
No,
those are
no
fun.
Facial expressions. Good job.
I have been trained over 270 episodes of Words and Whiskey to not react as much as I can to these kind of things. So, yeah, I'm trying very desperately and very hard, especially with this, because I have poignant and strong feelings. But that said, to bring up maybe one of the things that'll be an interesting component to talk about in the end is the death pool. Who lives, who dies, and who tells their story?
So,
in a little Hamilton twist.
As I think through this, looking at Odium and the contract and then Death Pool, I think Dalinar dies.
Yep.
But I think it's going to be in such a way that furthers things with Odium, and I think Adolin is going to step up into that mantle. But I think Dalinar's story arc is going to come to an end. He's
cool.
He's too consistent.
Fair enough. Yeah. I mean, at a certain point, how else do you develop a character, right?
Yeah.
Like, do you let them persist in the story until there is a different end, or what do you do?
Yeah.
I feel like I have to ask Kaladin next before we continue on to whoever else you want to jump to, but I have to beg Kaladin, you know, our two bigs.
I don't think Kaladin's dying.
Okay.
I think he continues forward. I think his role is going to continue to evolve. I don't know what that's going to be, but I think it's going to continue to evolve.
That is the most bullshitty business bureaucracy answer I've ever heard.
Listen, I'm in semi-sales. It's what I do.
I understand. I get it.
I think that he can never be that like fearless warrior that he was. I also don't think he's a general. I think he's got to find his own. And I think it's going to tie into him being a surgeon in some way, of him being like a healer, and but still being some level of leader. That's my less bullshit answer.
Love that. Shallan. What about Shallan?
Part of me thinks Shallan's going to die.
Okay.
Like soon. Because here's my theory is that Shallan and Dalinar both die. And that forces Adolin into this role. And he figures out how to restore the Deadeye Honor Spren, which is like that path's already going on with Maya. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like his arc is just picking up. And I feel like Shallan is getting stable now, and that's the perfect time for an evil fantasy author to kill them off.
Very true. Very fair. Mm-hmm. I'm going to pin that into Adolin's because I think that you've well surmised there are two paths, unless you have other notes on his. Okay, cool. I mean, obviously, we can talk about Vanji and Odium. You kind of did earlier to some degree that you think that Odium's going to make it through. So I think that that works out in the end here. You kind of made a reverse death pool prediction here with Honor coming back. What about Cultivation in the scope of things?
I think Cultivation is going to be a villain.
Ooh. Okay.
I think in a way where it makes, like, you understand some sort of way of, like, humans are destroying this world that I care so much about, and so I want to get rid of them, not in a directly...
Very Avatar, but very real.
Exactly. Yeah. Not in a directly evil way, but in a justifiable way that makes her side with Odium.
Okay. All right. I dig that. Dalinar, Kaladin, Shallan, Cultivation, Zeth, and Navani. Ooh. Yep. Those are the two that I definitely want to hit. And then any others that you want to, too. Those are necessary.
I'll do Navani and Yasna.
Oh, Venli and Yasna.
Yes. Okay. I'll start with Navani. I think Navani is going to continue to be Science Lady. I think that she's going to be used to help continue to explain the world.
Yep.
I think she has become a useful plot device to explain the mechanics of this system, which I thoroughly enjoy. I'm not mad about it.
Fine in its own right, but also, like, why is a character just a plot device? I understand. Yeah.
Yep. Yasna, we didn't get into this earlier, but I really didn't like Yasna at first, and I also knew she didn't die.
Fair.
There was too much put on her for her to have just suddenly died in a very offset kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there's a lot of growth yet for Yasna to become more of a main character, especially if people like Shallan and Dalinar die.
I love Yasna. Yasna is one of my favorite characters. I totally agree with you. I do agree with you, though, that she was very off-putting, and it was very obvious to me that she didn't die.
I really like the idea of what she could be, mm-hmm. but I'm waiting for that.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's yet to come. Zeth?
I'm going to tell you, I'm going to give you the briefest warnings.
Yeah.
Next book is Zeth's flashbacks.
Okay.
But that's the smallest of notes.
Okay. I think that that's a little bit alluded to as, like, they start to unravel a little bit, like, with the fact that his father is dead and the a little bit more taking back on the Honor Blades. I don't think Zeth survives this book.
Okay. Any particular reason?
I think...
Just vibes.
Just vibes. I think he is going to be in some way involved in reigning in Odium. I don't know if it's going to be killing Odium, but I think some way a sacrifice to further the world.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the ultimate payoff for Zeth's character, is to make a sacrifice that's truly meaningful after he's done all this meaningless stuff in his life because he believed he had to.
Cool. Love that idea. Venli, and then whoever else you want to make predictions on, but those are like the core group.
Venli opens up into just the larger... Venli is going to start creating a coalition between humans and listeners. Not singers, listeners.
Mm-hmm.
which also is a whole nother thing that took me a long
super
time.
Super cool as a sub.
Super cool.
Yeah.
But it took me a while to like conceptually understand what the differences were. But then I literally had to stop. I stopped listening to it and I thought about it for a little bit and I was like, oh, okay, I understand.
Get it.
The singers are the ones who went with Odium. The listeners are the ones who stayed back.
Right. Yeah.
So I think that there is going to be a larger split in not the Parshendi versus humans, but Odium's forces versus Honor's forces. And that's going to expand to more Parshendi being involved. And ultimately, Void Spren and Normal Spren mixing and working together and working with these mechanics that Navani has been establishing, that these things can be combined and work together. And we're going to see these mixes of different types of light and powers. That's what I think is going to really be the expansion. And again, makes me a little bit sad because I feel like we haven't even touched on what those powers can do as they are. But I think it is going to make this jump into, okay, now I can access Void Light and Storm Light and maybe Cultivation Light too. And how does that all play together?
Cool. All right. You know, there's one more. And you can add whoever else here. Wit.
I think Wit is going to take a bigger role and then step back and continue weaving in and out of the story. I think that's just Wit's
job.
Yeah. Is to weave in and out of the story, stepping in at critical moments to make a nudge here, a push there, to bring things where they need to be, but never to truly be in the forefront.
Sure. Dictate the reality. Yeah.
But there's also a part of me that goes, there could be other contexts from the larger universe that I don't know that would force him into that role.
Great question. Yeah. You can side-eye me all you want. That doesn't translate on an audio medium.
I know.
All
it
right.
It doesn't.
Anyone else? Any other thoughts? Any other high levels that we're missing here? I mean, there are so many characters. Maybe Renarin. We haven't talked a whole lot about Renarin.
I think Renarin is going to take on a much bigger role.
Okay. Okay.
Because it felt like he was like becoming more and more important. And then he was established at this very, like, he has a corrupted spren in him. Like, what does that really mean? He kind of stopped at this level where it's like, okay, we're not really sure what to do with you. We're going to put you over here. Odium can't see you. And that's its own thing that we need to understand. But I do think there's going to be a lot of growth in his storyline.
What else that you want to add to the list?
There
are plenty of characters. I mean, holy shit. Yeah. Any other characters?
Not that I can think of.
I'm going to beg one more. Kay. Moash.
Oh.
Because we kind of missed him.
I don't know about Moash.
And maybe Bridge 4 on the whole. Maybe I'll just like counter-ask that. Bridge 4, Moash.
I think Moash is done sometime in this book. He's going to die in some way. I think he has become too much of this soulless evil. And I think he dies in a moment where he recognizes his own failings. And there was like the brief instance where he fully lost access to Odium. Yeah. When Urothiru was restored, that like all of this pain came down on him. And then it was taken back away again. He's like, oh, I felt nothing. But all that pain's there. All that pain is real.
Yeah.
And so I think that there is going to be...
Before his blinding.
Yeah. I think there's going to be some level of redemption for Moash that results in his death.
Okay.
And the rest of Bridge 4, I think I would like to see them take on bigger roles.
Okay.
I think a lot of them have been kind of pushed out, but I would like to return to Bridge 4.
Cool.
I think that would be a good grounding for the story as a whole to just pull back to like, hear these people that like really made you.
What's Sigsel doing?
Yeah.
You know, what's
exactly.
Lopin doing? Yeah.
Yep. The Lopin.
Yeah. The Lopin. Yeah. The ever present. The Lopin. Yeah. Like I mentioned, Lift is a focus and a big part of Edge Dancer. And then Dawn Shard, of which is between books 3 and books 4, is. The Lopin is one of many characters inside of the story. So there are a couple of different touch points. It's a good one. I think you'll enjoy both for a variety of reasons. I would personally recommend that you do them close before we do the episode. You don't need to do them in proximity. You can jump right in, I think, to the end of the book, right into the final book, I should say. But I would do them before we do the episode at the very least, because I think they'll add a little bit of context.
I will spark notes them.
Well, they're so quick.
I will read them. I have been reading real books, so
yeah,
I'll see if I can get them from the library.
You probably can. They're also relatively inexpensive compared to the other ones. And again, Arcanum Unbounded, you can get them all. They might be available free online as audiobooks or digitally on his website. He put out a lot of those novellas just like completely like, hey, just have them. So
nice.
Yeah. Cool. I say novella. It's 200 pages. That's a fucking book for most authors. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, anything else? Any other predictions? Any other thoughts? How are you feeling going into this book? Are you feeling up, down, mid? Where are we at?
I'm excited. I'm excited. Cool. I feel like we're at this point where a lot of the plot has come together. This fight with Odium is coming to a head. Yorthuru has been retaken. Like, mm-hmm. we're on and up for the humans and the good mm-hmm. guys, as it were in this case, from this perspective.
True.
And
we're on a down for the soulless evil.
Yeah.
So original inhabitants of the world.
Yeah. I think that there's going to be continued up and then some level of down. No Red Rising levels of crushing soul defeat. Yeah. But I think Honorsbrenn are going to expand. I think that the Dead Eyes are going to start returning.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that overall it's going to be a positive start. And then there's going to be a setback in the first third of the book, like a major setback, and then it's going to be growth from there, because again, this is like a trilogy, so you gotta have the bad thing happen fairly early.
You have to have Empire Strikes Back. I dig it. I like that prediction. Anything else you want to say before we depart?
Just happy to be here. Happy this worked out.
Yeah, I'm happy to have you. I'm happy that it worked out. I'm very excited for you to read Wind and Truth so that we can talk about that in a couple of weeks. It's very, very fun. And we will give you a couple of weeks to do that, for the record, on the show in the coming weeks. This previous week, we had our first episode or our second episode of The Heroes come out. There's this. Next week, Adam and I are going to be tackling The Monk and Robot Duology by Becky Chambers. So two little novellas.
I really like Becky Chambers
mm-hmm.
for the most part.
For the most part, that I hear that pretty frequently, where there are bits that are well done, and that there are occasionally bits that are not completely thought out, like we've been talking about with like Stormlight. Like, you don't work out the logical details or ends of things sometimes.
But I will say, A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet is one of my mm-hmm. favorite books.
Wow. Okay. Cool.
I highly recommend reading it. The first three books in that series I really enjoyed. And I have not managed to finish the series.
Sure. Okay.
So
that is a way of putting it.
Yep.
But I'm excited to read the Monk and Robot books. I haven't touched A Long Way to a Small Angry Planet, but I'm excited to get into it. After that, I think we're going to read Dead Astronauts by Jeff Vandermeer. Kind of Adam and I again returning to that after we read Born a year and a half ago plus, which is a sequel-ish to Born. Should be a good read in one of those rare trippy books amidst the rest, and then we'll have you back on to wrap up your thoughts on Wind and Truth and maybe some of your early explorations of other things outside of the Stormlight Archive immediately. I mean that like the novellas or whatever you manage in the interim. So cool. All right.
Awesome.
Well, if you want to give us a follow or anything like that on any of our social medias, where it's Whiskey Pod on Instagram, Threads, and Blue Sky, which, you know, fuck Twitter, X, whatever the hell, for a variety of reasons. In addition, on Reddit, we are You Words Whiskey, which is just who we are. You can support us at patreon.com/wordsandwhiskey. It goes a long way. We do have a nice little Discord community, and we do occasionally post bonus episodes and material. We, as a part of the lead-in and PJ's family's whole like pregnancy thing, had to scale back and like refigure out some things. So we are still working on catching up on some things there, but we really appreciate everyone's support and keeping the show going. So it's a big deal. So with that, we'll see you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye.